What's going on? Happy Friday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the Reds game from Thursday afternoon. Nick Martinez getting the start, moved back into the rotation with Frankie Montas on the IL. And Martinez gave up four runs in the third inning, capped off by a Bryce Harper two-run homer in his first game back off paternity leave. Martinez would give up one more run in the sixth, but it really didn't matter much because the Reds were up against the Phillies ace Zach Wheeler. He was really dominant over six innings. The Reds did have one good chance against him in the third inning. Jamer Candelario had a leadoff walk. Santiago Espinal singled. Espinal, don't look now, he's reached base in six of his last seven games. And then with two outs, there was one really impressive at-bat in the game. Ellie De La Cruz walked off Wheeler after falling behind 0-2 in the count. And that brought Spencer Steer to the plate with the bases loaded and two outs. Steer just missed a double down the left field line. And then he hit a ball to the warning track to end the inning. Sam Moll threw a scoreless inning, and Buck Farmer did throw two scoreless innings himself, but the Reds' offense only finished the day with three hits, and they were shut out for the second time in the series to the Phillies. Reds fall 5-0. Reds have to settle for a series split against the Phillies. Reds now 14-11 on the season. Here's what Reds starting pitcher Nick Martinez had to say about his afternoon.
You dissect what the trouble you ran into in the four-run inning.
Yeah, I mean, a little combination of some bad luck and mislocations to the wrong guys.
I guess Harper always qualifies as the wrong guy.
Yeah. One of the best in the game, if not the best. So, I like the pitch call. I missed the execution and. He capitalized, and same with Turner on. Is that when he hit the cutter for the double? I think.
Yeah,
that's another good hitter where I didn't execute that pitch, and the first run a little bit of bad luck. Ball gets caught near the corner. Turns into a triple, then a sack fly. Just a little bit of bad luck there mixed with missed execution.
What do you think you see as a whole? What's the next step?
I think just to keep pushing forward, man. I'm not far off from getting on a roll, I feel like. It seems from a starting standpoint, I'm running some big innings, but there's a lot of good to take away from my starts. Just one or two pitches, that I don't execute, and it always seems to have some guys on base that lead to a big inning, and executing and mixing pitches well. Other than that, and then from a relief standpoint, just really nothing different mentally and physically. I feel fine executing and. Maybe just their shorter outings out of the bullpen, but again, I feel good just to keep pushing forward, I'd say.
I guess when you get a chance to start, you wish you could have work out in your favor more often than like days like today where you get a cut start for Montas for a couple times.
That's part of it. I think I do a good job, and we do a good job here of preparing for that, and the communication's really well. I wouldn't say it's... anything to do with, going to the bullpen and coming back into the rotation and going back to the bullpen, whenever that may be. So in terms of preparation, I think it's great. Body feels good. Probably just be a little bit better there with two strikes.
And here's Reds manager David Bell.
Some days you just got to tip your cap to the pitching you faced today.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it would have been nice to win this one and it's been a good homestand, so it'd have been great to for this one to end up differently. But you're right. I mean, we We started to get to Wheeler there that one inning. We made it tough on him. We get a hit there, you know, we were able to break through. Maybe it's a different game, but to his credit, he didn't allow us to do that. Kept pitching, and, you know, he's got 5-6 really quality pitches that he locates, and, you know, that was probably our opportunity, and, you know, he definitely got it done today for them.
What did you see from Nick Martinez today, and maybe what led to his problems in that four-run inning?
Yeah, I know Nick's not satisfied at all. You know, he continues to be a good pitcher for us. Had the tough inning, ran into a couple really good hitters, and they got it done. But other than that, was able to continue to you know, have a plan for every hitter, has good stuff, execute his pitches, and, you know, at times, you know, the good hitters are going to get to you, and that's what happened today.
This is the first team, the Phillies, that you've completed the season series against. You guys won the season series. Now with the expanded playoffs and how important tiebreakers are, is that a big thing going forward?
Yeah, I think it's just points to you know, how everything matters, every pitch, every inning, every game. You know, you set out to win in that way and let everything happen for you. You know, and when you do that over and over again, things like that, you know, are going to matter at the end. So, obviously, a very good team. We have a ton of respect for everyone over there, and who they are as a team. So, you know, it's definitely a sense of accomplishment, and, you know, we just have to keep going and keep doing our thing and doing what we need to do to continue to have success, and, you know, we'll get where we need to be.
All right, our deep drive of the day from Thursday afternoon was, as mentioned, Spencer Steer's long fly out to right field. Steer hit the ball 99.2 off the bat, going 353 feet. Unfortunately, just a loud out. But as always, our deep drive of the day, sponsored by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores around the NL Central. Those Brewers, they rallied to beat the Pirates 7-5. Cubs beat the Astros 3-1. The St. Louis Cardinals were off. So your NL Central standings on Friday morning. The Brewers are 16-8. Cubs 16-9. Reds 14-11, Pirates 13-13, and the Cardinals are 11-14. But if you're into this type of thing this early in the year, the Reds do still hold the third wild card spot by a half a game. All right, well, here is myself and Trace Fowler from a short, not a whole lot to talk about, Chatterbox Reds Live post game on YouTube. Stick around at the end. I'll tell you about all the Reds minor league action and go into a preview of the Reds' upcoming series against the Texas Rangers.
All right, Nick, losing edition of Chatterbox Reds, midday, businessman special, as some would say. And, you know, there's really not a whole lot that was, you know, overly optimistic to discuss in regards to the offensive performances outside of maybe Ellie De La Cruz, and he didn't even get a hit. So shout out Espinal, shout out Luke Maley. Did we get any more when I was trying to load in?
Martini got one.
All right. Look at us. Look at us, everybody. You know, some people are going to get mad at me for maybe being like this, Nick. And it doesn't mean that I don't care. It just seems that it's inevitable. Like, you're going up against one of the better pitchers in the game of baseball, completely in the entirety of baseball. And not only that, you've got an offense that I hate to say this right now, but it just feels like, they're a little bit lost in space. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Wheeler has the most wins above replacement of any pitcher since 2018. So, and you're, you know, going with Nick Martinez, who's been bounced from a starter to a reliever. And, I mean, this is a game you're going in with house money. Would have been great to get a win, but it is what it is. You move on, and the tough road continues. Now you had to go play the defending world champs. But hey, look, overall, this was a good series for the Reds, going up against four really tough pitchers. You're able to get out with two wins. This is really what anyone, and I think rationally, could have hoped for going in. So hopefully just keep it moving along.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to even put together what I just watched into words that are even somewhat meaningful. And I said last night that I was going to give Candelario some time, and I'm going to do that. Like, I have to do that. I'm forcing myself to do it, right? It's almost like a bad habit right now is to start talking about just how frustrating it is. I think some of it's just the fact that the way his at-bats look sometimes are frustrating. I don't know how you kind of look at it or feel about it, but, you know, I guess for all intents and purposes, you know, if you hit a ball 100 miles an hour on the ground and it's a ground out, or you flail at one and it's a little 40 mile an hour flare that the shortstop catches is without a problem, they wind up being the same production level, but it doesn't feel the same, right? Like Tyler Stevenson, it felt like for quite some time, Nick, Tyler Stevenson was seeing the ball well. He just wasn't being the beneficiary of some tough breaks. Maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but it doesn't feel like Candelario is anywhere close to that right now, which is a little concerning. But having said that, I'm just going to be patient. I'm going to be patient with him. Steer put a couple good swings on the ball today. Just wasn't rewarded for it, I guess, is the right term to use. I mean, I'm trying to be nice. At the end of it all, it's like, this is why yesterday was such a big deal. This is why I was so fired up yesterday, is because I knew in the back of my mind what was happening the next day, or what was coming down the pike per se. And it just makes yesterday feel that much more meaningful, because today felt like we were stealing a win if they won, right? That's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah, I do think Steer, I mean, I don't think his slump is nearly as concerning as like Candelario's, like you mentioned. Like, there's not really a whole lot of underlying metrics that can make you feel good about the way Candelario's playing. Steer had two more hard hit balls today. He's had a lot of hard hit balls. So I'm not really that concerned about him. I doubt really that many in Reds country is that concerned about him, as consistent as he's been, you know, since he's came up to the big leagues. Candelario, I guess he did draw a walk off Zach Wheeler, so that's a positive. As bad as that one at bat was yesterday, he did have two walks yesterday, so he has at least drawn a couple walks. But yeah, I mean, he's got to pick it up. I mean, he's a guy that the Reds are really counting on. I have to hope that his track record will even out, but there, I can't also make up that there's some good stats that say that it's for sure coming, other than his track record, because he's not hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball into the ground a lot. You just have to hope that he can figure it out here and figure it out in relatively short order.
Yeah, I was going to add something. I mean, Sean brought up something today, Spurlock. Candelario's had two seasons that, you know, he unfortunately just wasn't who he traditionally is. And I am not trying to go down that path on April 25th by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not something that's completely out of the question, right? I think there was one year where he had an OBP of like 280, somewhere along those lines. So, you know, it can happen. It can happen to anybody. It's the nature of the beast. Unfortunately, he's not got off to a good start. And I don't know if he's pressing. I don't know if it's something else that's bothering him. But at the end of the day, we're going to need Candelario to play relatively well here over the next, as I've said 1,000 times, and I'll probably stop saying, because people are tired of hearing me say it, over the next 30 days, we're going to need him and CES and certainly Ellie De La Cruz continue to play well the way that he has. But I guess if you want to start on a bright spot, I don't know how long this show is going to ultimately end up going, but let's just at least say that Ellie looks great right now. Like, The defensively, he looks good, Nick. Like, I mean, he made a couple great plays today. I genuinely am impressed by this kid. Like, and I know we all sit here and ooh and ah over the highlights, but like, it was very important for me at least at some point to see, like, hey, this guy's consistently making the fundamental plays and he's consistently having good at bats, and he's done that over the last 2-3 weeks.
Some of the pitches he's laying off of are just, it's remarkable how quickly that is, how he's improved on that. And we haven't really talked about it, but, you know, there was a lot of chatter, and sometimes this kind of chatter can really get overblown. But he worked with Juan Soto in the offseason, who's like the plate discipline god right now in Major League Baseball. And I don't know if that's what it was, but whatever it was, I mean, for him to draw a walk off Zach Wheeler, a guy that doesn't give up a lot of walks, one of the best pitchers in the sport after falling behind O2, is impressive. But then he also drew a walk off of Orion Kirkering. I don't know how to say his name. The Phillies view him like kind of the Reds view Fernando Cruz. Like, he's their like up and coming top reliever. He has not given up a run all year. So those were two walks off of two very good pitchers that throw nasty pitches that you have to lay off of. And so, man, just his improvement in plate discipline has taken him from a guy that was a good player at his worst to a guy that's a superstar.
I agree. I do agree with that. I mean, if he's able to become a little more polished at the plate and be selective, it takes him from good to great. It does. And I'd also say defensively, if he's capable of routinely going to his backhand side and being able to make plays the way that he did today, he goes from good to great. And again, you keep saying it. I've never left the bandwagon, but he is very young, and you'd like to think he's going to progress and progress and progress, but you never do know until you see it. And he's starting to show signs that he is making significant gains. Now, the ultimate question becomes, Nick, will he continue to do what he's done the last two or three weeks consistently over the rest of the season? I don't think he will, because that means he's probably like he's genuinely an MVP candidate. And I don't know if that's the precedent we want to try to set here in this 22-year-old season. However, if he backs off of that, how much is he going to back off, if any? We'll find out. I mean, that's the good news. Before we jump more forward, let's do the game time. For those that are wondering, you don't know yet where you can get tickets. You might be asking yourself, what's the best way to get tickets? I'll tell you the best way to get tickets. You download the Game Time app. You use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y. And you'll get $20 off your first purchase. But more importantly, you get to use a really good app. And it's two clicks. I've done it. I'm getting ready to do it for FC Cincinnati, I think. I still got to convince myself of this. But yeah, you could check in all-in pricing. You get some flash deals from time to time. I think you get up to like 50% off some tickets depending on the time of day. And hint the name, Game Time Nick. You can wait pretty much right up until game time to get the tickets. So no worries about not being able to get the tickets delivered in time, et cetera, et cetera. So use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y. Get $20 off your first purchase, and it'll be helping us out. Other thoughts?
Nick Martinez, it's so weird that he's such a different pitcher as a starter and reliever so far. It makes no sense. Credit to him for getting through six innings and saving the bullpen, but man, he got rocked. There's 12 hard hit balls. He gave up 11 hits. He didn't walk anyone. He threw strikes, which is the only reason he lasted six innings. But man, I don't know. Is it just a sample error?
Some of it's got to be sample error.
Got to be a little of everything, right?
Something about sample error. I also think that there's this distinct difference psychologically between being a starter and being a reliever. I do. And I think sometimes when you're a reliever, right, you don't have a whole lot of time to think about, you know, pitching, for lack of a better term. Like, you get called, hey, Martinez, you need to get up, warm up. You're in the game in what, 20 minutes, Nick, at most? Martinez has time to think when he's a starter. There's, you know what I'm saying? Like, he sits on it all night long. He wakes up, spends all day, I don't want to say thinking about it, but he spends, you know, the rest of the morning knowing that he's going to be the guy. I think that can psychologically be different. So I'm not saying that's all it is, Nick, but that's some of it. And I will tell you this. I've said this all year. I'll say it again. The Reds picked him up to be a reliever. They can sit there and lie straight through their face. They can sit there and say, oh, well, you know, we signed him because we think that he could be a starter, but he could be flexible. Well, today, he was that flexibility piece. But if all things are going semi-well for the Reds, they don't plan to use him as a starter. Simple as that.
Yeah, I wonder if he got more of a run as a starter, if he would eventually prove that he's a
a capable major league starter. Kind of reminds me, he's a lot older than this guy, but we'll actually see him this weekend in Michael Lorenzen. Because remember, he had that stigma about him. He's only good as a reliever. He can't start. Yeah. And then once he finally got a chance and he got an opportunity to start, he went to a really bad team, if I remember correctly, in the Tigers, where he had the long leash. Like, there was no like, oh, if you have two bad starts, you're moved right back to the bullpen. He was able to figure it out. The Reds, it's a good thing. The Reds don't have that luxury to continue to run him out there and let him figure it out. I wonder if he would over time. But again, I'm not really worried about him and his like overall role. I also think if he does have to make, if I would still give him, I think he needs to make one more start before they're expected to bring Montas back. I would still let him make that start personally. There's no one at AAA. Connor Phillips has walked everyone. I would probably let him make that next start. I mean, I guess that Carson Spires has thrown the ball well, but it's really Carson Spires going to give you a better chance to win than Nick Martinez. I don't see it. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting.
They'll stick with Martinez if those are the options that are still available to them. What's the timeline on Williamson? Do we know?
Yeah, we actually got a question on the chat, so I just looked it up. It's weird. We have gotten very little information from Williamson. Last thing that we got was, this was an update on April 10th. After being shut down in spring training, Williamson began a throwing program on April 2nd, but has not worked off a mound. Bell expects Williamson would have to go back to square one of his spring training plan and build up through five innings. That likely sets his target to return somewhere near the end of May. And that seems like, after actually reading that, to be optimistic, right?
Yeah, so, he's hurt. Like, he's actually hurt then.
It was weird, though. When he got hurt, it was a shoulder injury. The way it was presented was like, oh, this is just going to be, he's going to be shut down for a couple weeks and it'll be fine. It was really weird how it went from how
he's
it was
doing
initially
rehab
presented.
Then, clearly, right? Yeah. I mean, he's doing rehab. I'm assuming he went and got the shoulder checked out and they said, hey, it might be a partial tear or whatever it is in some situation, or some partial strain. To where you don't need surgery. If you get surgery, though, you're going to be out 100% until, you know, basically next season. And they probably decided, you know what, I'll rehab this and see if I can't, you know, basically fix it on my own. And that would give him a timetable of coming back midway through the year. So that's my guess. And they don't really want to come out and probably say what the timetable is right now, because they're trying to figure out whether or not the rehab will actually fix or start to fix the problem. And if it doesn't, then they'll just come out and say he needs to get surgery. Because if you think about it, Nick, not to get into the weeds of Williamson per se, but just the timeline of a shoulder injury in and of itself, they probably have probably 3 or 4 months right now to see if they can't get it fixed until he gets surgery. If he gets surgery, he's going to be out for the year regardless. If he gets surgery now, or if he gets surgery in the beginning of June, he'll be ready to go for next season regardless. So let's just give us a couple months here to figure out if we can't perhaps go a different angle to save the ability to come back for this season. I don't know. That's all speculation, by the way. I'm trying to read between the lines, but I'm guessing that's basically what they're trying to sort through right now. And that's why they're not saying a whole lot, and rightfully so, because the only people that are probably going to ask significant questions about Brandon Williamson more times than not are going to be us in the chat. And, you know, I don't expect them to have to come out with answers. So having said that, we are who we are, you know, and that's where I'm at this point, Nick. I don't know how much more we have, how much we have left in the tank of this show per se, but my final point I want to make here before we go is this is who we are right now. And listen, I'm not suggesting that you have to have a loser's mentality and you have to, you know, play woe is us or anything like that. But I just know inevitably when I watch this ball club right now, we are inadequate offensively. I don't know how else to say it. Like, there's not enough good, consistent offensive pieces on a night in, night out basis to where I don't want to say I expect for them to give us enough run support to win baseball games. But I'm leaning on the idea, honestly, at this point, hopefully our starting pitcher can hold us up a little bit. Hopefully Ellie De La Cruz and XYZ can kind of pick us up this game, and then it's Ellie De La Cruz and, you know, ABC the next game. Like, Ellie is such a big pivotal piece on being able to keep this team afloat, God honest truth, that he's capable of carrying this team. I don't know how many other guys are capable of carrying this team offensively, but he's one of them. Am I saying that I expect that out of him? No. But I guess I'm wishful thinking right now that CES or Candy, one of them have to get going, and they have to start driving the baseball, and their OPS has to get significantly better. And then other than that, you know, can we piecemeal together a Santiago game? Can we piece together a, you know, heaven forbid, a Will Benson game? Can we piece together Jay Meir getting a game? And then overall over that next, like I said, maybe this next month, we're able to scratch out I upset some people today by saying 13-17. So maybe I'll stop doing that. But, you know, I just inevitably know this is going to be a tough stretch of baseball for the Reds, and I'm hopeful they can find a way to scratch through it. We'll find out.
Yeah, tough stretch of baseball. I will say, though, looking at the starting pitching matchups tomorrow, we'll get to that in just a second briefly, will be really tough. But then the next three are actually, you know, three right-handed pitchers, all probably average-ish type pitchers. So hopefully that. The next start lined up for Nick Martinez, though, I will say, is against the Padres. So I kind of love the idea of giving him a chance to face the team that decided he wasn't worth extending.
And they didn't really give him a shot to start, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that extra fuel that, you know, he'll have. So, yeah, good for that. I don't really have a whole lot else to say other than, you know, happy they took 2-4, would have loved to get today, but it didn't happen. Oh, well.
Faced a good arm. I don't know how to say it. You tip your cap is what I think they say in the world that we live in. You tip your cap. So tip my cap. Wheeler, good pitcher. We move on.
All right, well, let's get you caught up on all of the Reds minor league action from Thursday night. Start off with AAA, the Louisville Bats. They won 9-6 over Nashville. Bats have now won 3 straight games, and they improved to 12-12 on the season. And the Bats, they beat up Aaron Ashby, 6 earned runs against Ashby in 3 innings pitched. That's a guy that's on a 5-year, $20 million contract with the Brewers. Carson Spires, he certainly outpitched him. He went 7 innings, just gave up 2 earned runs, only walked 1 and struck out 6. So very impressive start by Carson Spires, who's having a pretty impressive season overall. Blake Dunn, this was the story of the day, though. He was on base 4 times, 2-for-3, hit his first home run of the season, and walked twice. The home run at 101 off the bat. Blake Dunn, finally, hopefully, getting healthy, and he could absolutely find himself in a Reds uniform sooner rather than later. Reese Hines, he was 1-for-5, made that 1 hit count. He had a 3 RBI triple. He also did line out at 115 off the bat. That was the hardest hit ball recorded on Thursday at AAA. Mike Ford was 1-for-4 and also stole his second base of the season. Connor Capel was 1-for-4 with a stolen base of his own. All right, down to AA, Chattanooga, their tough season continued. They lost 8-3 to Birmingham. Lookouts now just 4-13 on the season. It was a tough start for Julian Aguiar. He didn't make it out of the second inning. He gave up 3 walks and 3 earned runs. Andrew Moore, though, another impressive outing from him in the bullpen. He threw 2 1/3 scoreless innings, didn't walk anyone, and struck out 2. On the offense, the only really standout performance was Nick Northcutt. He was 2-for-4, hit a homer and a double. You might remember Northcutt, a local guy in Cincinnati, was also the return for Tommy Pham. He started his season late this year, but he already has 5 extra base hits and just 15 at-bats. Tyler Callahan's tough season continues, a guy that was building a little bit of momentum as a prospect heading into this season. He was 0-for-4, did walk, but Callahan hitting just 158, 4.11 OPS. Austin Hendrick did not play. All right, down to High A, the Dayton Dragons. They lost 9-4 to Lansing. Dragons have lost 6 of 7. They're now 7-11 on the season. Cam Collier did have a really good day, though. He was 2-for-4 with a double, but that was about it. Sal Stewart, 0-for-3, did walk once. Jay Allen, a really tough day, 0-for-5. Carlos Jorge, 0-for-3 with a walk. And last but not least, Low A Daytona, they won 2-0 over St. Lucie. They are now 10-8 on the season. And the top two arms down at the Tortugas, they both pitched, and boy, were they good on Thursday. First, Adam Cerwinski threw four shutout innings with four strikeouts, only allowed two hits and a walk. And then Andrew Laureano, two shutout innings with two strikeouts, just one hit and a walk. The lefty Cerwinski has not allowed a run in 16 innings pitched. He's got 19 strikeouts and just four walks. And then the right-handed pitcher, Laureano, he's only allowed one earned run in 10 and a third innings pitch. He's got 17 strikeouts in 10 and a third, and he's walked six. Not a whole lot of the offensive side. Ricardo Cabrera was 1-for-3. A couple Reds prospects continue to struggle. Carlos Sanchez was 0-for-4, and E. Smith Pineda was 0-for-3. Alfredo Duno got the day off. All right, well, starting on Friday night, the Reds will take on the defending champion Texas Rangers down in Arlington. Quick recap of the Reds and Rangers history. You might remember last year, the Reds had an improbable three-game sweep of the Rangers at Great American Ballpark. Why was it so improbable? Well, this was before all the prospects showed up last year. Reds were coming off a six-game losing streak, and they were just 7-15 on the season. In Game 1, the Reds trailed 6-4 in the eighth, ended up winning on a T.J. Friedl walk-off single. Game 2, the Reds trailed 6-0 in the seventh and took the lead in the eighth on a Jonathan India 2-RBI single. And then in Game 3, Nick Senzel had a walk-off two-run homer in the ninth for a 5-3 win. Reds 10-12 all-time against the Rangers. Reds just 3-5 all-time against the Rangers in Texas. This will be the first meeting for the Reds against the Rangers in Texas since 2016. And this will be the Reds' first ever series at Globe Life Field that opened in 2020. You might remember the Reds' most memorable win over the Rangers in Texas was back when Devin Mesoraco hit a go-ahead two-run homer in the top of the 11th on June 29th, 2013. That was a national TV game on Fox. All right, your pitching matchups for this series. Friday night, tonight as you're listening, 8:05 start. It'll be Graham Ashcraft going up against Nathan Eovaldi. More on that matchup in a minute. Saturday, it's a 4:05 start. Hunter Green going up against Michael Lorenzen, and that is a national TV game on Fox. And then Sunday, weird start time for us East Coast folks, a 2:35 p.m. start. It'll be Andrew Abbott going up against Dane Dunning. The Rangers, they enter the series 13-13. And they're playing in a good division, though. They're only a half game out of first place behind the Mariners. The Mariners sit at 13-12, Rangers 13-13. Then you have the Angels at 10-15, the A's at 10-16, and the Astros, I can't even believe I'm saying this, are 7-19. Rangers, they started the season off strong. They were 6-2, but they're just 7-11 since. Rangers are a really good defensive team. They lead Major League Baseball in defensive run save, but currently they have $68 million worth of their pitching salary on the IL between Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer and Tyler Mahle. That's not even counting the nearly $21 million of Scherzer's salary that the Mets are paying this year. Scherzer is actually on a rehab assignment, but the Reds won't have to worry about him this weekend. The Rangers have put up pretty average overall offensive numbers if you look at it, but they've got a pretty deep lineup 1-9. They've gotten the now veterans in Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, and Adolis Garcia. They've surrounded them with some really special young talent in Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford. All right, more on Friday night's starting matchup. For the Rangers, Nathan Eovaldi comes in 1-2 with a 3.30 ERA. Eovaldi is now in his 13th big league season. He's been really good of late. He's got a sub-4 ERA each of the last 4 years. And last year in the postseason, he went 5-0 with a 2.95 ERA in six starts. The last two starts, though, for Eovaldi have not gone as well. His first three starts of the year were incredible. He had a 1.45 ERA. But his last two starts coming against the Braves and the Astros, both on the road, he has a 6.35 ERA. He's got a career 1.71 ERA in three starts against the Reds. One of those starts last year, though, he gave up three earned runs over six innings pitched. Prior to that, he hadn't saw the Reds since 2014, back when he was with the Marlins. Reds overall, active Reds, 6-for-24 against Eovaldi. That's a .250 batting average. Jamer Candelario's 2-for-4 with the walk. Jake Fraley's 1-for-4. Jonathan India, 1-for-2 with a double. Spencer Steer, 1-for-3 with a triple. All right, for the Reds, it'll be Graham Ashcraft, 3-1. He got a really nice record, but just a 5.24 ERA. His last start was a tough one against the Angels. Gave up 5 earned runs in 5 innings pitched, walked 3 batters, and only struck out 4. However, his only career start against the Rangers came last year. Threw the ball pretty well, 3 earned runs over 6 innings pitched. And the active Rangers against Ashcraft, they're just 3-for-16. No one on the Rangers has more than 2 at-bats against Ashcraft. Well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Really appreciate your support. If you've not yet subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, wherever you listen to this podcast, make sure you do that now. We have new podcasts the morning after every single Reds game all season long. If you could also leave us a 5-star review, that really does help us. Just a quick 5-star review where you listen to this podcast. We love that. But more importantly, tell a friend about Chatterbox Reds. That's the best way. Word of mouth is still the best way, I think, to share the love that we hopefully bring you here on Chatterbox Reds. We're also, of course, we do live post-game shows on YouTube on Chatterbox Sports. Off the bench, 10 a.m. to noon. Definitely going to tune in if you're a football fan. They'll be talking, reacting to the NFL draft and the Bengals pick. So that's 10 a.m. to noon, Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. And then we also have Kenner and Kev from 3 to 5. That is a ESPN Radio 1410 simulcast. So lots of good content on Chatterbox Sports. And then we'll, of course, be live for Chatterbox Reds live post-game Friday night late, probably about 10:30 or so. Hope to see you there. And then, of course, if not, we'll be in your podcast feed bright and early on Saturday morning. Well, hope that you have a great Friday. Hope that you have a fantastic weekend. And always and most importantly, go Reds.